This podcast is proudly brought to you by POC Podcasts.
Hi, my name is Kgabo Legora and you're listening to Son of a Son, where I as a dad speak to other dads about how we can become better men. Today I'm joined by Mike Stalforth. This amazing dude found me back in the day when I was starting my business and helped me find my way up. He is also a dad of three amazing kids, and I really hope you guys enjoy this one.
Hello, 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 good people. We're back. Today I am joined by a good friend, good mentor of mine that I've had for a couple of years now in the business world. His name is Mike Stopforth. He is a former digital agency / communications agency owner. He is now running another company that is just doing some really innovative stuff as well. Mike, bro, welcome.
Kgabo, what a pleasure to chat to you, man. I must confess, I was quite nervous about joining you on the podcast today. Normally, I get to talk about work stuff, right? And it's sort of a little bit removed from one's personal life. But this feels a little closer to home. So
yeah,
I'm ready to go.
Yeah. Look, I mean, like, exactly. Like we've rarely talked about, I guess, personal life when we've sat across the room from each other. It's always been like coaching and business stuff. So I think like now I'm like, but I've always known and watched like how you've, I guess, publicized or posted about your kids and stuff. But I've been curious. So I think it's the right time to kind of like have this conversation as well.
Cool. I'm stoked.
Bro, so when did you become a dad?
Kgabo, I was young, I guess, relatively speaking. I was married at 22, engaged at 21, married at 22. And my son, who's now 16 years old, wow. was born when I was 24. Yeah.
Wow. Look, I think, you know what, it's actually a rare case. I think I have a similar story to you. Not 22, but I think I was... My wife was 23. I got married when I was 24. And then I had my first born just before I turned 25.
Soon after you got married.
Yeah. So, bro, your boy is 16.
16, dude. He's a monster. He's
a like grown man.
75 kilograms. Genuinely terrifying human being, but yeah, he's incredible. Really, like I've started to reinvest in my like in trying to stay fit and strong just so that he can't beat me up. This is my sole purpose.
and you have two other girls, right?
Yeah, so my son is 16, Ethan. His younger sister is 12, that's Katie. And my little one from my second marriage is just turned 5 in November.
I don't know if it's a great age gap, but it was also a big age gap, yeah.
Yeah, and then our helpless little one, Lungisi, he's 9. So he's kind of filled in whatever gap there was between number 2 and number 3.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. I've got the whole range.
Bro, I was like offline. I was just thinking, I'm like, I know that your son is a teenager. And I'm like, when I was thinking about us talking today, I was just like, man, the thought of raising a teenage boy or girl just gives me palpitations, bro. Because I'm like, you know, the stereotypes that we hear about teenagers, like they're just like either they're rebellious or they're hard to communicate with. And how's that been for you so far?
Yeah, so mate, I think there are a couple of different things to consider in that mix. Yeah, there is an enormous amount that's said about how difficult teenagers can be and how difficult parenting teenagers can be, and I think there's some truth in that. Yeah. I think a lot of that is us remembering our own teenage journeys and probably how difficult we were. Sure. But I think that the teenage journey is really one of discovering your own identity and watching your body and your mind and your personality go through some pretty dramatic changes in a very short period of time. And, you know, I think, and this will probably be a theme of our discussion today, but so many parents in the midst of all of that try really, really, really hard to maybe in some ways overcompensate.
Exactly.
And I think when our kids are going through that stuff, most of what they need is just our presence and our support and a non-judgmental perspective on that journey. And I think, not to suggest that I've got that right, because another part of this is who your kid is, right? Not all teenagers are the same, obviously.
They're
magnificently different in many ways. I'm very lucky that my boy is he's just a good kid, and he is, I think, very real and very authentic in his behavior, and I think that it counts for a lot in terms of making it a hell of a lot easier to parent. So, but that might not always be the case.
So Mike, I mean, like, I try always to put two and two together with any story, I guess, with people's stories when I'm talking to them on this thing. And I know that communication is a big part of your background, work-wise and just personality-wise. You, like, you communicate really well. Have you felt like that's something that you've intentionally kind of like had to apply as you're raising your kids now? And I know that your daughter's now going into teenagehood from 12 to 13.
Yeah. Well, you say all the right things, Kabul. Thank you. So before running an agency, I was actually quite involved in the community and in the church. And I was always really enthusiastic about youth work. I used to love arranging camps and, you know, facilitating sessions and all sorts of stuff that I think was very kind of centered around that age group. And so I've always enjoyed relating to that sort of teenage age bracket. So for me, I think it's actually been reverse in that when my kids were very small, I think I struggled to figure out exactly what my role in their lives was. And I think I tried to be a version of dad that maybe wasn't 100% authentic to me. And so I was trying so hard to be what I thought I needed to be that I maybe didn't always get a chance to be who I was. Whereas as they become teenagers, I felt a lot more comfortable. And again, it helps here that I'm a younger dad. I think I'm genuinely as interested in the Marvel movies as my son is. And I'm as into Post Malone as my daughter is. And I think those things help us connect in a way that might be different if there was a bigger age gap. But I think that I find it far easier to just show up and be present with my kids at this age than I think I did when they were younger. And on the plus side, I learned from that experience. And I guess with Ayla now being 5, I'm placing far less pressure on myself to be a version of dad, and more just kind of be me and show up and with, you know, sort of warts and all.
I feel like I'm in that stage at the moment. I mean, my oldest kid is turning like 7 this year, and you know, when I sometimes I feel like, you know, I'm trying too hard, like my, like with my kids, like the oldest, I mean the youngest one is turning 3, the oldest is turning 7, between the 4 of them. And now, like, when I compare that to my relationship with my dad, like, exactly what you're saying, like, you can relate with them because you're still fairly young and their interests are similar to yours. I find that with my father now, we are relating a little bit better because, you know, the subject matters that we talk about are similar. He didn't really know, like, how to be, you know, present and communicate with, like, a teenager or a 10-year-old where the age gap is like 20 years. So I agree with you in that part. Like, it does matter, the fact that to have something to relate to, and overcompensating really does mess it up a little bit. So just fast.
You're nailing the head there, bud. you can't be who you're not. And if you are, then you're discounting something somewhere along, you know, you're paying a price for that. And I think that comes through in your children's experience of you as a parent. And like this idea of, we talk about this a lot, and I know that you've covered this on the podcast, the idea of just being present and how increasingly difficult it is to do that in this modern world where there's just so many distractions all the time. And but I honestly do believe that like 10 minutes, 15 minutes of like engaged presence with the average child on behalf of a dad is worth like 4 or 5 hours of trying your ass off to be something you're not.
So true.
And I, like that's certainly been, it's taken a huge amount of pressure off my experience of parenting Ayla, and I think has paid dividends in terms of the closeness of our relationship and the rapport that we have together. So yeah, I think you're exactly right on that point of presence.
Yeah. Funny enough, I had a session with Craig Rodney. He's gonna feature in this season as well. And we were talking about the exact same thing about like just how to be present in this digital age with our kids, and that whether 5 or 10 or an hour of your time for your kids right now will pay dividends, like you say, later on. And I know that you also like very familiar with the digital world and like all of its, that whole universe and what it brings into business and what it brings into the home. Has that been like a bit of a thing in your learning with raising your kids?
Yeah, great question. Well, first, I just want to say I'm super stoked to listen to Craig's episode when that happens.
Yeah,
I mean, he's properly dad goals. His energy for presence with his kids has always been an inspiration to me. And I'm good in sprints, but not good in marathons when it comes to attention and presence. But he seems to be able to run marathons. So, obviously in my line of work and because we're privileged enough to have access to some nice technology in our home, our kids have always kind of had that in their world. But again, like in a weird way, the individual personalities play into this in a big way as well. You know, my son, despite having access to consoles and that kind of thing, has just never really been big into gaming. For a while, him and I kind of played PUBG together and we both enjoyed that. And I think he still does. And my heart was a little sore when he didn't allow me into his squad of friends. He was like, sorry, Dad, we don't have space for a fifth today. He would much rather be surfing or outdoors or whatever. And I don't think it's because he's better or worse or because I did something and somebody else didn't. Like, not at all. Like, some people just enjoy gaming and tech more than others, and that's perfectly natural and cool. And I don't think we've been hugely strict about limiting exposure to technology. I think, you know, that there's the person, although my younger one, my 5-year-old, would literally sit in front of the TV and watch Netflix all day long if we allowed her to. So she'll probably have more of a preclusion towards technology. And I suppose we'll have to manage that as we go. But technology, like anything, is a tool, right? It's a double-edged sword. It has its pros and cons. And I think that any parent who's blaming technology for failures in their relationship with their child is probably misdirecting the blame. It is a challenge, no doubt.
I get you, man. I get you 100%. And I mean, to contextualize things, I always say like the name of the podcast is Son of a Son. And it was titled because, you know, we all come from somewhere. Whether it's, you know, it was a dad that was absent, or it was a community that raised us, or the mom that kind of like had to play the dad figure in the house as well. And we haven't spoken about this. I don't really know much about it. And if you're willing to, how do you recall your own relationship with your father?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I think that the process of becoming an adult really in many ways is just reconciling your relationship with your parents. And my dad worked incredibly hard. He worked in construction, so you know, he was out of the house at 6 a.m. and he was back at 7 o'clock. And my memories of him as a kid were, I think kind of the typecast dad role in many ways. He was, incredibly loving and affectionate with us, but also the disciplinarian in the family. Like, my dad never had to give us a hiding because he had a look, and we just knew. when you got the look, then the hiding didn't need to happen.
Yep.
So I always experienced him as an authority figure who gave us an incredible combination of security and also structure. He really got that balance right. Like, I felt safe, but I also felt like I lived within a disciplined realm. And I think, I don't know how to say that better than what I'm saying, but he got that balance really right. And then, over the years, he and I have gotten a lot closer and found other places to connect with each other. And, you know, I've learned that my dad is, as we all do, not necessarily the person I knew growing up. And I think he's learned to connect with me in different ways. And that's amazing. But my dad and I were still, you know, at the tender age of 40 and, you know, kind of 70 plus respectively, we'll still wrestle on the couch. I'll still give him a hug when I see him. I'm very, very lucky that it's a very healthy relationship. You know, there's work for us to do. There's stuff that I think that, you know, one day late at night over a couple of whiskeys, we probably need to talk about, but everybody has that stuff. And I'm just, you know, when I think of the fatherhood journey that a lot of other, or rather the childhood journeys and the fatherhood experiences that a lot of other friends of mine and colleagues of mine have had, I'm just extremely fortunate to have been lucky enough to land up with the dad that I got.
Yeah. You know, just as you're talking about just sitting with your dad over some whiskeys and talking through some stuff, I have a similar kind of like thing where I'm like, you know, my father was in and also like typecast kind of thing. It's like present but not present thing, you know, like you're gone to work, comes back, and you see him there, but you don't necessarily have access to him. But along the way, as I guess when I started having kids, it just looked like a big part of him started to open up to me as well and availing himself. And I think there's certain things that in my brain, I'm just like, man, I have a lot of questions for this guy, but I think I just need to sit across the room with him over a drink. Funny, and over Christmas, I remember they came over for lunch, and I whipped out a glass for him, and then I started playing his old school music for him, and then he started to open up, and I started talking to him about certain questions that I had and certain decisions that they made for us growing up, and asking him these questions, and I realized that, you know, it's hard for the bravado or the masculine, the so-called toxic or whatever masculine, I don't know how to phrase it, to kind of like engage with a young person. Like when you think about, like if you are the stereotypical man that we know in our society now and you're plus 40 or 50 years old and you're sitting across the room from a 16-year-old, how do you communicate? You know, whereas you haven't been necessarily you haven't had that strength in your relationship along the way. Do you get what I'm saying?
Dude, I think you're on solid gold here. I mean, first of all, I must just say, I just love you relating the story of Christmas and your dad. it sounds like we're the same dude, basically, because the same thing happened. We had Christmas at our house, and a couple of years ago when my grandfather was still alive, we had a particular Christmas where he was there, my dad, and my grandfather was in his 90s at that stage, my opa, and my brother was there as well. So it's kind of, you know, all the generations of Stopforths, and my brother and I have had our stuff. So when we're together at a time like that, there's always an emotional component. But as is often the case, I landed up drinking a half a bottle of whiskey on my own. And I remember at the late when everybody was leaving, I I gave my dad a hug. I helped my opa into the car, and then I gave my dad a hug. And as I gave my dad a hug, I started crying. And I didn't even know why. I didn't know what I was feeling that initiated that response. Could have just been, you know, purely a response to the Jack Daniels. It wouldn't be the first time. But I think it was a recognition that there's such weight in those moments, and there's such gravitas in those interactions. And we are essentially defined by the combination of those mm. connections. And yeah, it's just you realize in those moments that there's stuff I need to do here. And part of our challenge, I think, as sons, is creating the space to do that with our fathers, if they're willing. But I want to pick up on this point of what you spoke about with, you know, I think we need to be careful that we delineate the idea of an older version of masculinity at what is often called a toxic version of masculinity from this idea of the dutiful father. And I've been thinking about this quite a lot. And I think many of our fathers were driven by a sense of duty. And that duty came from like an obligatory alignment to a set of principles, an order, a structure that didn't necessarily fit their personality, but was very much the societal norm that they, you know, a man is this, a man does this, you go to the army, you get taught these things, the government tells you to do this, your workplace tells you to do this, the media tells you to do this, you have to James Bond it out there and best of luck if you can't cut it, right? And I think when I think of the journey that many of our dads took, even, you know, despite the differences of their cultural experiences growing up, there was this overwhelming sense of duty to something. And duty is not always bad. Sometimes duty is really powerful and really motivating. I think one of the things that maybe is missing from our generation of men is a sense of duty and purpose. Some of us, I think, feel a little bit lost. And that has its own set of problems attached to it. But yeah, I find that topic really interesting is how many of our fathers, I think, were and then arrived at sort of like retirement age, were suddenly released from duty and were like, well, who the hell am I now? Like, what do I do now? What is my place in the world now that I don't have to go into the office from 6 to 6 every day and don't have to provide and don't have to? And I think that's been so tough for a lot of our dads and grandfathers to navigate.
Bro, there's so much meat in what you just said. Because, you know, like the whole thing that, you know, duty came before, and I mean, I say this with caution, duty came before relationship for most dads back then. Because I think back and I'm like, oh, hell yeah, my father made sure that we were fed, everyone was going to school, everyone had their grades up, everyone had clothes on their back, but there was a price to pay if you had to do that, because you might not have had the luxury of like hectic financial freedom that might have given you a bit more time to have a bit more like relational capital. So duty was really high up there. I got to go work so that you can go to school. And when you're done with school and you start working and they retire, then it's like, oh, hey, my name is Khabo, right? And you start getting to know each other.
This is like, what I like.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, the other day, like my father was calling my son and with like the most like affection and everything, and I'm like, dear Lord, like where was this when I was 5, you know? And I'm like, I completely understand it. Your mind frame is very different at that time compared to now, because you have had to sacrifice so much just so that you can get to this point where now you feel like you can breathe. The other day, like my father's approaching retirement as well. And he's now asking me, yeah, I want to go into business. How do I do this? How do I do that? And I'm like, man, like I'm now having to give advice to my dad. And it's a mind screw a bit right now, because, you know, our relationship was never really that. And learning how to do that, the fact that he's actually listening to me now. Yeah, it's doing a lot.
That's such an interesting dynamic as well to talk about, is how the roles switch as we get older and you start to take on the parenting function and our parents look to you more for guidance. You know, it's a tough thing for, I guess, both parties to figure out, because we're not always used to playing that role. And at the same time, for our parents, it's that can't be easy to do. You know, their whole lives have been geared towards protecting and nurturing us, and all of a sudden they find themselves in a position where, you know, the equation is different. But it has to happen that way. It's the circle of life.
And you know what, Mike, as we're nearing toward the end of the session, I want to ask you something that I ask every single guy that I have a session with. You know, the climate that we're in, for men, for fathers in our society. Some of it, there's progress, but at the same time, there's still some social ills that still exist. To fathers out there, what kind of token of advice would you just put out there for men right now, especially in South Africa?
Sure. I guess two things, Khabo, and they are potentially contradictory, but I reserve the right to contradict myself. The first thing is, if there are things happening in the world around you that are making you fundamentally uncomfortable, there's a lot of learning that happens in discomfort. And often there's real magic in the discovery that comes with putting yourself into a space where you can learn new things and question the beliefs that you've always believed are fundamentally true and central to your, you know, kind of those core beliefs. I think there's great comfort in discomfort. So I really would want to encourage dads that and men that are feeling like, hey, some of the conversation that's going on is uncomfortable, maybe just to sort of engage with it in a trusting and an open way and see what might come out of that. The second part is to encourage men to be who they are, to be authentic and real, and to stop trying to be a version of themselves that they're not. And you know, one of the things about masculinity in the world is that, yes, it is a source of a lot of problems and ills and issues and social injustice, but it's also one of the solutions. It also is a powerful force that can be used for good and for constructive engagement and growth and to shift policy and people in the right direction. And I think that we need to be encouraged to embrace that. It's the same way I talk about privilege, right? You can hate privilege and dismiss privilege and poo-poo privilege and all these sorts, but that doesn't help anyone. You know, the way I see privilege is that it's like an epidermal trust fund, right? You can fucking hate it all you like, or you can use it to do something useful with, or you bend it towards good or whatever it might be. But the choice is yours, you know? So maybe fighting it less, embracing it more, and looking for ways to build bridges rather than break them.
Bro, I love that. I love that. You ended it off on a bang, man. Mike, bro, I really appreciate your time. There's a lot of things that I feel like it's you're leaving things hanging. We could probably have a panel one day about all of these things. but I appreciate you, bro, and thank you again.
I am Khabo Legora, and thank you for listening to Son of a Son.
This podcast is proudly brought to you by POC Podcasts.